What is going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Catching Heaters. I am your host, Matt, of course, and as always, I am excited to be here with you. MLB draft last night. It was fun to see baseball back on the television. I really enjoyed being back on the MLB Network and seeing Brad Amsinger, Harold Reynolds, watching those guys just talk baseball and see the draft picks kind of coming out and have them discuss some of the guys that are coming out and different players and teams and kind of get their reaction to everything. So it was fun to see some new baseball coming out. I wanted to take some time and do a quick recap, kind of go over some of the picks that stuck out to me and just give some general insight, you know, into the first round overall, things that I noticed, things to keep an eye on, and just kind of have some fun with it. You know, one of the first things that stuck out to me, and you're starting to see this trend year to year now, each draft, in that they're starting to have a little bit more of college players, collegiate players selected in the first round. And this year, there was no change in that trend. The first seven picks were all collegiate players, and the first six picks were all alums of the collegiate national team, which is interesting. So you see that run on college players to start the draft, and it's really no surprise to me, and it kind of goes to one of the things that I talked about, you know, just in general when you're talking prospects. I think that those guys have a proven track record and have grown into their bodies a little bit, shown their proven skills against higher level players in college. So especially with what was happening with the shortened year and scouts not really being able to go out as much to see players in person, you kind of just saw some of the safer bets going with some of the collegiate players in the first majority of the first round. Obviously, there's high school players that go that have high upside, but kind of that first round, you saw that run on collegiate players. But first overall pick was with the Tigers. Obviously, they went with Spencer Torkelson. He's from Arizona State. The Tigers farm system, you know, they really have a lot of upper-level pitching prospects, you know, Casey Mize, Matt Manning. So it makes sense for them to go bat here. And Torkelson was who everyone was kind of thinking they were going to pick out of Arizona State. He really, you know, what scouts are saying, he has a really advanced approach, plus bat speed, plus raw power. He is one of those guys where you're really hoping you can kind of, people are comparing him, if you can get a Paul Goldschmidt or a Pete Alonso out of him, that's the kind of player that you're hoping to get. I know that they had him listed as third base, but I think if you're looking future, he probably ends up over on the first base side. But there's a lot of tools there to like with him. He has that elite bat. I think that's why you just go with him, because he really had that nice collegiate career with Arizona State. So safe bet there. If he continues to hone his skills, he definitely can be a plus power guy with, you know, a nice approach. So nice pick by the Tigers there. I don't think that there was any shock that he went number one. To the couple first topics I'm going to talk about are in the top five here. So the second pick the Orioles had, and they went off page here, off script of what everyone was predicting. But it was an interesting pick for them, and there's a lot of factors that went into it. They ended up picking Heston Kerstag, and he's an outfielder out of Kansas. I'm sorry, out of Arkansas. And they took him at the number two overall. And it's an interesting pick because a lot of people thought that Austin Martin was going to go number two. But from what I'm hearing and understanding, and it's starting to make sense, the Orioles had some flexibility and they wanted to give themselves an opportunity to have more money and cap space as they were going into the second round. And it's something that the current GM had done in previous years. So Mike Ellis, who's their current GM, He was with the Astros as a scout director back a couple years ago, and they did a similar thing where they ended up taking Carlos Correa at number one over Byron Buxton. And what that ended up allowing them to do is they didn't have to sign Correa for as much money as they were going to have to sign Buxton. And then they ended up going out and getting Lance McCullers at their number 41 overall pick with the Astros because they had the flexibility with the money that they had there. So it's an interesting pick. Obviously, they liked Heston enough to take him second overall. I don't think if they didn't believe in his skills, they wouldn't take him number two overall. But I think it gives them some more flexibility. So it's interesting to see what they do tonight with their second round pick. They have the second pick today. So I'll be interested to see what they do. They did end up drafting someone towards the back end of the draft as well, Jordan Westberg. That was their first supplementer. He's a power speed threat guy. So they ended up with two players I'm sure that they really like. But it was just interesting to see how they played it out with Heston and then gave themselves the amount of money to be flexible. They can basically go after any guy they want in the second round. So that was an interesting take on the number two overall pick. I'm going to jump to number five with Austin Martin. Obviously, he fell quite a bit. Everybody thought he was going to go number two. I think the Blue Jays got an absolute steal with him, and that's kind of what everybody's saying. He plays shortstop, is the position they're putting him at. He's out at Vanderbilt. But the thing about him is he's a very versatile player, so he plays multiple positions. They're saying his pure hitting ability is really good. The bat speed is there. They call it eye-popping bat speed. And he's got an excellent contact ability as well. So, man, I really like what the Blue Jays are doing. I'd be interested to see what they would have done at the number five pick if Martin didn't fall, if they would have ended up going pitching. Because with everything that they have coming up through their system right now, obviously, Martin in the next, I'm sure he's a 2 to 3 year guy. He should be up. I don't know if they'll end up putting him at shortstop, but if you move Vladdy over to first base eventually, which I could see happening, and then you end up putting Martin at third, that's a pretty good infield there with Bichette and Vladdy and Martin if Martin's skills pans out the way that everybody thinks that they will. The one thing for the Blue Jays that I've always said, and I, you know, when I've talked cards or other things, is, you know, they're going to need pitching, especially in that division. So Austin Martin fell into their lap, and I think you have to take him there because of the upside that he has. But I would have been interested to see where they would have went if he didn't fall in their lap. So interesting thing there. We'll see what the Blue Jays do with the rest of their picks, but really got a steal in Martin at number five. So those were the top guys in the top five, top 10 that I kind of was looking at that I wanted to talk about. And then I wanted to take some time to go into a couple players just outside the top 10. And then towards the end, just a couple guys that I want to throw out there as well, just to keep an eye on. But number 10, the Angels ended up going with Reed Detmers out of Louisville. And this is the only pitcher that I kind of brought up. I mainly try and discuss, the hitting aspect of things because I think that those guys make a huge impact. And pitchers, when you're talking draft and in the minors, there's a lot of factors that go into it. A lot of guys don't pan out. But the way the Angels are constructed right now, they really have, you know, high upside bats in their farm system with Adell and Brendan Marsh. So I really like that they drafted a polished pitcher here at number 10. He, you know, he's a strike thrower. He really hides the ball well in his delivery. His fastball isn't elite. He hovers around 90 to 91. He can uptick it to 94. But his plus pitch is the curveball. And watching highlights and people talk about him, just the way he commands the zone and the way his pitches, the speed, how he offsets the 91-92, his curveball is a plus pitch for him, and it's in the high 70s. So when you go from, a 92 to high 70 curveball, and then also he has an above average changeup that he mixes in. So I think that he's someone that's going to elevate quickly through the system. And obviously with Mike Trout there for a while, you want to build around him. And with the two highly touted outfielders that they have ascending as well with Adele and Marsh, I think that they made the right decision with going with a pitcher that, one, he's proven himself at Louisville in college. He can kind of move quickly through the system as long as he continues to hone in on his skills. But I've always been high on pitching where, look, health is a big concern for pitchers. So he's not a guy that is really, you know, putting a lot of effort into his pitches. He has a smooth delivery. He's not throwing 100, so I think the risk of him getting injured is less. You know, you never know with players. I think it all is circumstantial, but he kind of has an effortless delivery, and he really hones in on his command and control of the zone, and then the different the way he pitches is just the different speeds of the pitching. He kind of, like, as far as describing him to a current pitcher, like, I don't think the way his pitches come out look the same, but you think about like a Kyle Hendricks with the Cubs, who, you know, he's maybe not that elite number one, but he's a solid number two, number three guy where really commands his zone. His pitches, the speed of his pitches with the changeup and everything that he has, really allows him to fool hitter. So I could see Reed Detmers being that type of pitcher. So I really like that pick for the Angels. All right, so moving on. Number 13 was the Giants. They picked Patrick Bailey from NC State. He's a catcher, switch hitter. Interesting pick for them. You know, they just took Joey Bart last year. I think it was the number two pick who they had coming up in their system. So it makes me – it's just an interesting pick for them to go catcher back-to-back, and it really just shows that a lot of times clubs, and I agree with this, is you just got to go with the best player on the board. And obviously, Bailey was the best pitcher on their board at that time. So, but it makes me think, I mean, what's the future for Joey Bart or even Bailey? Bailey is a switch hitter. He's got some power. Are they going to move Bart out of the catching position? I don't know. Maybe they could move him to first eventually, but you also have Buster Posey. So, I mean, long-term, catchers do take a little bit more time to pan out, but both of these players in Bart and Bailey are out of college. So, I mean, their time frame to the majors is 2 to 3 years rather than it being a high school catcher. So, another aspect of it is, I've talked about this in previous episodes, and I think they might play with it this year, is the DH and the NL, but what if in 2 years they end up implementing, you know, the DH in both leagues? This is something that maybe the Giants are forecasting and thinking about long term, so that's an interesting aspect of it to think about as well. I like the pick. It's just the intrigue's there, and I wanted to talk about it a little bit because you think about drafting a catcher in back-to-back years, just something that is very interesting, but nice pick for them. Bailey's a power guy. He's well defensively behind the plate, so we'll see how it kind of pans out for the Giants in the next season or two. The next pick is the one that was the shock of the draft, number 17, Nick York. He's out of high school. He was ranked the 96th overall player in the draft, so a lot of people were confused by it. Some people were calling him, you know, one of the best pure hitters as a high schooler on the West Coast versus some of the other high schools that were out there. But there was some reserve, too. I think it's half and half on Nick York. I think the potential is a future plus bat for him, and he's a fringe power guy. The thing when I was looking at this with the Red Sox is obviously they don't have their second-round pick because of everything that happened with the scandal going on. So their next pick isn't until the 89th overall. Maybe they really coveted York, and they probably could have gone, if they didn't get penalized, another player than York in the second round. But without that pick, this was the guy that they really wanted to grow as a high schooler into their system. So, you know, a lot of people think he's going to be an excellent commander of the zone, a great pure hitter with hand-eye coordination. So we'll see how it pans out. The kind of question mark there is, you know, I think they just – I don't know if they had a hard time to figure out what they wanted to do with losing that pick. So that's an interesting pick there with Nick York. So we'll see how it pans out for the Red Sox. The last couple players I wanted to touch on, I had to touch on the Cardinals. Of course, that's my squad. So they ended up with the 21st overall. They went with third baseman Jordan Walker. He's touted as the best high school third baseman in the class. He's a big boy. He's 6'5", 200 pounds. The skill set on him is he's a plus raw power guy. They're projecting him for potentially more, obviously, as he grows more into his body and hones his skills. Right now, he's currently committed to Duke. So they're saying that he might be a tough sign depending. I don't know if that's why the Cardinals went in on him at the 21st pick. But the risk thing on him is his ability to sign. And then also, out of high school, you know, the talks are he's a kind of a swing and miss type of guy. A lot of times that's the way it works with plus power hitters, especially when they're taller, like 6'5 and up. So I'm sure he has to hone in on that skill set and work on his approach. The thing I love about the Cardinals system is they really go after the guys that they think they can mentor and groom within the system. And they've always traditionally done a great job with that. So if they see the potential in Jordan Walker, I'm on board. I like the power potential. So if they can hone in on his swing and miss and his approach to the plate, I really like the pick there. So nicely done by the Cardinals. The last two guys I wanted to touch on. The first guy, the Cubs picked him number 16th. It's Ed Howard. He's out of high school. Really, they're saying he's the best shortstop defender in this class. Really toolsy guy as far as hand quickness and hand-eye coordination. So he really is going to stick at shortstop. And they're saying he has upside as a hitter, but he's a plus defender. And it kind of goes to what I was talking about. Now I'm talking, you know, I'm going to get into a little fancy talk here, but it goes to what I was giving advice on when you're talking about players being able to move through the ranks quickly. Now, obviously, he's out of high school, so he's going to have to go to those lower levels, but it seems like a lot of people are talking about he has the defensive skill set that he possibly could play in the majors now is what they're saying. So if he starts to hone in on his hitting skills and they think that he can be an upside hitter, above average hitter, he's going to ascend quickly through the organization. And as far as a premium position at shortstop, you always have to have an elite defender there. So I like the pick for the Cubs, even though it's in the same division as the Cardinals. But fantasy-wise, he's a guy to keep an eye on because I think he'll move through their system quickly. And if he gets to his bat skills, watch out. You know, if he continues to grow and put on some weight, he could be an above-average home run hitter as well. So I like the Ed Howard pick for the Cubs. And then the last guy I wanted to touch on is Carson Tucker. He was picked 23rd by the Indians. He's out of high school. Interesting, he's Cole Tucker's brother, so obviously there's baseball ties in the family. You know, they really think he's going to be a steady ball player. Nothing too flashy with him, and he has a chance to stick at shortstop as well. So they like his defensive skills within the Indians organization. What ends up happening with Francisco Lindor? Does he stay in Cleveland long term? So this could be the shortstop of the future for the Indians. So keep an eye on Carson Tucker. Obviously, they have the skill set in the family. They're saying maybe the speed is there, kind of like his brother. So just keep an eye on Carson Tucker. He's an interesting guy. I had fun kind of watching the draft last night. I don't know if everybody got to watch it. I hope this kind of helps a little bit with some of those top picks. Gives you a little insight into what my mindset was. And I just kind of want to have some fun and discuss the draft a little bit because as of right now, everything that's going on in baseball, I'm hoping that they can get their stuff together here and get the season going. That's all we would like to see. One quick note, outside of the draft, I know everybody is still intrigued by Topps Project 2020. And they keep coming out with cards this week. I really like what they have come out with. But like I said, these print runs are starting to come down. So let me see if I can hop on. I think the Urmsy Jeter ended today. So let me see if I can get a print run for you while I have you on the podcast. Very interesting, though, as how these print runs from this week, like I said, they're starting to slow down. The King Saladin that ended on, I think it was Tuesday or Wednesday, that ended up having a print run of 12,874. And we had a card fall under the 10,000 mark with the Dwight Gooden by Grotesque. That ended up being 8854. So, man, if I would keep an eye on this, guys, because if they some of these low-key artists that people aren't as hot on right now, I think that these might start to tick under 10,000. And they did just release the Urmsy Jeter. I love this card. This is a sweet-looking card. And as expected, like I said, I think Urmsy might be one of the top five guys collecting as far as the artists, and Jeter is one of those top guys as well. But the print run isn't astronomical, 24,908, so a pretty high print run. But the card with it was the Bob Gibson by Gregory Siff, which Siff has had some high print runs. His was only 11,395. So a couple of these cards that are still out there, I think they're gonna stay within that 10,000 to 20,000 range. You got the Ben Baller right now that's out, so we'll see what that ends up being. And it looks like Mr. Cartoon came out today with the Mark McGwire, which is a nice looking card as well. So there's a little quick update on what is happening this week in Project 2020. I hope you guys enjoyed the MLB recap from the draft last night and talking a couple of those players. Please check me out on social media platforms. I'm at Instagram. I'm on Instagram, at Catching Heaters. I just got onto Twitter, at Catching Heaters, and I'm also on TikTok, at Catching Heaters. Please give me a rate on the show, the podcast. If you'd rate me 5 stars, I would greatly appreciate that. Give me some feedback, some comments, anything that you'd like to hear in the upcoming future. Certain topics that you would like me to discuss, I can dig into that and kind of listen to the audience and what you guys are looking for. As always, guys, I enjoyed it. Thanks for being here with me today, and I'll see you on another episode next time.